This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay, Mike O'Neill here. Action-packed show. We have two discrete components. In our second half of the show, we will be interviewing Arizona former Teacher of the Year turned Arizona legislative candidate Christine Porter Marsh. But first, we have a discussion of the Great American Road Trip with John and Neo Martinson. Let me in here. Okay, that just set the mood. You took off with your son. John Martinson is here. Son Neo, you took off in a Tesla, touring the Western United States. Tell us what the point of the trip was.
So the point of the trip really started off as a trip for my son and I to spend some time together alone, doing what we both love to do, which is to drive. Mm-hmm. And I had earned an Executive Master of Sustainability Leadership degree at ASU, and when I applied the sustainability lens I'd acquired in that program to the trip, I realized that we can make it so much more than just the two of us on a road trip, but I could promote clean energy and electric motoring and electric road tripping and that sort of thing. So I reached out to the School of Sustainability and to Rocky Mountain Institute, which is a kind of a think and do tank based in Basalt, Colorado, and asked them if they were interested in having me promote them as well.
Mm-hmm. And tell us about the route. And this was basically something you did in late summer.
Yeah, all of July.
Uh-huh.
So we started at first night was well, we left from the School of Sustainability and
at ASU
and spent the first night in Farmington, New Mexico, then to Durango, Colorado, Telluride, Boulder, and then Park City, Utah, Jackson, Wyoming, Yellowstone National Park, Whitefish, Montana, then up to up through.
Sounds like you didn't visit any Superfund states. These are pretty nice places.
No, but we learned a lot about each place as we went. So went through Glacier National Park up to Banff in
Canada.
In Canada.
The border.
And as high as or as far north as Jasper. And then across British Columbia to Whistler, down to Whidbey Island, Seattle. Well, actually, Vancouver, Whidbey Island, Seattle, then to Santa Rosa. Oh, wait a minute. Sorry.
Details don't matter. We
went around the Olympic Peninsula and all the way down the coast.
The coast. Now, did you have events scheduled in a lot of these places?
Yes. We had 12 meetups through a variety of groups that a couple of people reached out to us on the trip and created meetups. Some were Tesla meetups. Some were meetups with a sustainability consultant company out of Spokane, whatever, and a company that makes solar panel solar chargers for electric cars in San Diego.
Mm-hmm. So did Tesla involve itself in any way? I assume you must have at least approached them.
We approached them, but they just don't do these sorts of things. They don't promote. Everything's word of mouth in Tesla.
That's kind of surprising. It would seem to be a logical.
It's successful.
Well, they're losing money. There's a waiting list to buy cars. And they're losing money. So it's the grand enterprise. Can they get there with scale and get over the hump?
Yep.
It seems to be very touch and go. If they fail economically, they will have proved concept for somebody else. You know, I'm thinking of the fact that, you know, at the turn of the 19th to the 20th century in that area, the first couple of decades of the 20th century, I think there were about 100 car companies in this country. Right. You know, three of them fundamentally survived, plus a few, you know, minor stragglers. You know.
I have faith.
In Tesla, specifically?
Yes, I do.
You just took me out for a drive a few minutes ago. I got to tell you, it was a neat experience. The first thing, and I think years ago I had driven one battery-driven car, some APS prototype maybe 20 years ago. And for anybody who hasn't, the first thing that you experience is the utter silence. You hit the gas, you hit the accelerator. Gas is like Kleenex, you know, it's become a worry. You hit the accelerator and you do accelerate. It does have very, I didn't test it to its full capacity, but even in a moderate range, you can pull out in front of traffic without hesitation. You feel the surge, but you hear absolutely nothing. And that takes a little bit of getting used to. And the other thing that I experienced, and you explained to me, when you take your foot off of the accelerator, it slows down more rapidly than a gas-driven car does. And you explained that that was
regenerative braking. Actually, Neo could explain it better than
all right,
I could.
Go for it.
Yeah, so the motors that are used in these cars are actually AC motors, and the alternators used on gasoline cars are just AC motors run backwards. So what Tesla's done is they've essentially found a way to run that motor backwards by letting the wheels drive it as opposed to the motor driving the wheels, and then they recuperate that energy. They put it right back into the battery. And it, you know, has a great impact on range, especially in mountainous driving.
So every time you take your foot off the gas and you coast, it's collecting, it's getting positive battery power back.
Yeah,
is that fair?
Yes.
And you experience it as a driver. I think, as I noted to you, you would have to adjust your driving patterns because in my car, a gas-driven car, you take your foot off the accelerator, you coast for quite a while. This felt like you were putting on a brake. And it, so it'd probably take a couple of days of driving or something like that to adapt to that.
So they essentially call it one-pedal driving. So if you get really good at it, you can take your foot off the accelerator as you're approaching a red light and slow down to almost a stop. So the joke is that the only things that you replace on a Tesla are windshield wipers and windshield fluid.
Oh, because it's not – I presume you have brake pads, but you're hardly ever using
them. Hardly ever use them, yeah.
That's very interesting. Wow. So
tires are the other thing you replace. So.
We'll take a break here because I want to get another big issue. I want to ask about, you know, running out of power and, you know, all the issues related to that and get Neo's reaction to all of this. When we return, we'll be back in just a minute in the think tank and we will be discussing again the Great American Road Trip.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we're back with John and Neo Martinson, who just took the Great American Road Trip. They got in a Tesla, drove up to Canada and around down the western coast back to Phoenix. Neo, what's it like spending a month in a car with your dad?
It's interesting, and it's not something that you can experience without just doing it. I had a fantastic time. You know, he had planned out a lot of different activities and things that I would like, as well as things that he would like. We got to know each other. It was a bonding experience.
That was my first reaction to the whole thing. What a fabulous opportunity for that.
Oh, definitely. There's things now that you know, we've discussed with each other and conversations we've had that we wouldn't have had without this trip. And I think that was the idea. I think that's why he planned the trip. Or at least one of the big reasons, and I think that was successful in that regard.
So were you up for this from the get-go, or did you have to be coaxed into it?
You know, I had to be coaxed 17, into that's it a little bit, because it's summer. You know, school's out, it's summer, and after summer, school's back, and that's all that's what you get. But, you know, after the end of it, and, you know, even pretty shortly into the trip, I'd come to a point where this is going to be a good experience, and after, on the tail end of it, I don't regret anything. I think it was a fantastic time, and I'm glad that I went, and I recommend that anyone else do the same.
Well, John, I envy you this. I know my sons a few years ago there, and I got this place in Mexico on the beach. And finally, after all these years of being diffident about it, one of my kids, Dad, I want to go down there. And I said, great, we'll do this and we'll do this. And, no, Dad, what I mean is I want to go down there with my friends. You stay here. We go down there. So is this, Neil, has this impacted your thinking about career or in any way shaded that?
You know,
you're a, I assume, high school senior.
Yeah.
Give a plug to the school.
A plug to my school.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I move around schools a lot, and I've been online, but I will give a plug to Westmec. So anyone out there who's in high school and is interested in a career technical field like aviation maintenance, EMT, AMT, you know, all of the technical sides of things, give Westmec a look. It's a great program. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm looking at. I've got my pilot's license. I'm getting my aircraft mechanic license. I want to do something in the aviation field. And we did actually on this trip talk a lot about the future of electric planes and how this trip and how that knowledge can, you know, change what I might have wanted to do for the future.
I've seen an occasional article about electric planes. You think they have a viability?
You know, I don't think we'll see, you know, boarding from London to Phoenix on an electric 737, but they are great cost-wise and maintenance-wise as far as not burning so much expensive gas and you know, simplicity to operate. So I think there will be definitely a private and a pilot training interest in those.
We're talking aircraft. Piper Cubs and things like that.
Yeah, definitely.
So, What would you guys both say? What was your number one takeaway from this experience?
My number one takeaway, don't judge a book by its cover, I think is how I would do that. You know, I always kind of seem to think that, you know, my dad is very set in his ways and he is what he is. And conversations were always a little bit tough. But once you sit down and talk to him, you know, he's not trying to convince me that, you know, gas is bad, everything's bad, you know, we're going to be fine. He's interested in the future. And I think a lot of people are, and they come off that way, but they're not. Talk to people. They're great.
Wow, that's interesting. A solar electric guy seen as set in his ways. That's a nice – I think there's been a – I guess if you grew up with that as an assumption.
I think Michael, that's something like being a father and not, you know, being – wearing the dad hat at home.
Mm-hmm.
And when the two of us are out on the road, sort of casting the dad hat off and being more – you know, the road partner.
Yeah.
So an equal
yeah.
relationship.
It also reminds me of like the theme of, I think it was the 80s, Family Ties, you know, the kid rebels by being a Republican.
I remember.
So what were some of the most interesting experiences you guys had along the way? Must have met some people. I mean, you get your car is decked out in all kinds of decals and things. You were not inconspicuous.
No.
So you must have encountered people all the time. So what's this?
Well, every time you stop at a supercharger, for example, there's usually other Tesla people there. So they come in and talk.
Let me get back. But it's just a couple things occurred to me. When you're at a supercharger, how long does it take? The high-powered one, how long does it take to charge you up?
So you get an 80% charge in 30 minutes.
Okay.
And I had an API going on the car throughout the entire trip, and so I've collected a lot of data, and right now I'm putting that into a giant report and a white paper. And
just arithmetic, I think your range you told me is around 300 miles.
Well, the car is advertised with a range of 310 miles, but we got actually about closer to 350 miles.
And you get 80% of that, so that would be 250, 280, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, something in there.
And that's enough to get you to the next station. I assume you had it mapped out of where everything was.
So actually, no. So when you plan a trip in a Tesla, I mean, there's a few online apps. I think there's three of them. And you know, part of my goal of the trip was to prove the accuracy of those online apps. Mm-hmm. So I'm still kind of doing that. But, you know, Tesla has an online app. And I'll tell you one specific example is we wanted to go from Jasper to Kamloops in British Columbia. So Jasper, Alberta to Kamloops. Mm-hmm. And according to the Tesla app, we could not make it there.
Uh-huh. What do you do under? So, I mean, this is not a hybrid, so you don't have an. What's your plan B when you've got faced with something like that?
All right, so I contacted Facebook groups, Tesla owners of Alberta and Tesla owners in British Columbia. And I said, can we do this trip? And they said, well, you should be able to do it during the summer. You can't do it during the winter. And so I figured, what the heck?
You know, you're in the middle of nowhere. Should be able to is not very reassuring.
We added some excitement to our day.
Yeah. And I wrote a blog post about this. But anyway, when we got into the car and set the destination in when we were in Jasper, that we were going to Kamloops on the way to Whistler, it said we'd get there with no problem. So the online app was not accurate to the season.
Now, you paid for electricity on the trip. I know you did some calculations. If you translated that into gas cost, did you?
It was low.
Have not done that.
I thought you did a whole lot of calculations. Well, great trip. Tell us where, if some people want to read your blog, where do they go?
They go to teslaroadtrip.blog.
All one word. teslaroadtrip.blog.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Goes too quick. John Martinson, Neil Martinson, good to have you on the Think Tank. Very interesting. I envy you the bonding opportunity. Terrific.
Yeah.
We'll be back with Christine Mars in just a moment.
Exploding to space. I like smoking lightning. Heavy metal thunder. Racing with the wind.
Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we are going to talk broadly about education and politics, a topic that has been repetitive in Arizona due to recent events. Our guest is a former Teacher of the Year, Christine Porter Marsh. Welcome to the show. She is also the Democratic nominated candidate for the Senate in Legislative District 28. By the way, congratulations on the big primary win.
Thank you.
It's always nice to run unopposed. I assume this was your first foray into politics.
Correct. This was my first.
Yeah. Only fair, by the way, just to tell you some of the reasons you're here. One is you're facing Kate Brophy McGee.
Correct.
And she was on the show earlier, so I thought it was only fair. You're associated with Red for Ed at some level, which I think is one of the most interesting political movements I've seen in 40 years of covering Arizona politics. And thirdly, this is only one of maybe three or four out of the 30 legislative districts that are at all competitive. So the Arizona Senate may be at stake. There's currently 17 Republicans, 13 Democrats, and most analysts, including myself, think that the Democrats have a reasonable shot of getting to 15 to 15. And the significance of that is if you're at a tied situation, basically the Democrats have to be included in discussions of governance. At 17-13, they're irrelevant. So that's the reason you're here.
Correct.
quick bio. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona. I went to Chaparral. I've lived in Legislative District 28 pretty much my entire life, except for when I went to run track at UCLA and then moved back home. I raised my two sons here. This is my 27th year of teaching. I taught for 25 years at Chaparral High School, and this is now my second year at Cactus Shadows High School. And I'm a mother of six foster kids formerly. And my roots are very, very deep in this community, and I care passionately about it. I'm also, as you mentioned, the 2016 Arizona Teacher of the Year, which certainly has informed pretty much the rest of my life. I mean, that was a life-changing experience.
Okay. In that bio, I heard everything but politics. What got you into politics? And is this something very recent or is this something you've thought about for a while?
This is running is recent in terms of in the last, 15, 16 months is when I really started thinking about it. But politics has been a pretty big part of my life always. I was kind of joking around with the guests that I brought that I was probably the only high school student that I knew who listened to KTAR in high school. So my political interests go very, very deep. Mm-hmm. I am running, though, because of things that have happened within the last 10 years. Watching as my students suffer the consequences of decisions made at the legislature. And, tired of that.
Okay, let's dig a little deeper. How have your students suffered over, and you made a specific time referent roughly over the last 10 years, which, by the way, that's 2008, the economic crash. And that's when education budgets did go down. But and that's a fact. I mean, mm-hmm. Budgets went down. But you referenced how your students have suffered. I wonder if you could be specific about that.
Specifically through increased class size. We now have, in Arizona, depending on your source, we have the second to the fourth highest class sizes in the nation. And certainly I have lived and watched as my students have lived that. I can remember when 32 kids in a class, the first time I had 32 kids in a class, having just heart failure through the summer. Like, how am I going to get 32 kids ready and give them the skills that they need?
And what level were you teaching at?
High school English.
High school English, yes. Okay.
And now, we have class sizes that are, 37 to 42. You'll have occasionally small classes mm-hmm. here and there, but on the whole, the average is significantly higher than it used to be.
Do you know what it was and what it is? Average?
No, only anecdotally. Mm-hmm. Okay. Only what I've lived.
Okay. You've lived and you've seen up in the neighborhood of 40, I think was the amethyst.
The most I've had is 41. Mm-hmm. But there are, I've had colleagues who have had 44.
Okay. 10 years ago, what was it?
10 years ago, it was in the low 30s. So mm-hmm. I'm saying 10 years ago when I'm mentioning where I really started to notice effects. But we've been increasing class size for longer than that.
I wonder if you just react to this because it's one of my big takeaways. I had a conversation. My kid was in a middle school, and it was an advanced accelerated middle school. And I asked him about the issue of class size. And I said, is this a problem? And now this is on the front end of that 10-year.
Yes.
And I said, well, tell me, how much does class size, could you handle more? And he had an interesting response. He said, in a class like this, yes, these are no behavior problems, high achievers. Mm-hmm. He said, but in a normal class or a class where you've got problems, I couldn't handle this number.
Correct. Yeah, the more variables you put into it, the harder it becomes for English teachers and for a lot of other teachers as well, not just English teachers. But that is exponential. And, the increased class size causes a great deal more time out of school grading essays. I mean, I have a stack of essays with me right now because I carry essays with me pretty much everywhere I go. Mm-hmm. To grade them when I'm waiting for whatever it is that I'm waiting for.
Yeah, if you're teaching English and you're doing writing, you've got a lot of manual. That's different from grading multiple choice tests.
Correct. Yes, there's no Scantron machine mm-hmm.
for
an essay. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
And writing is probably one of the most important life skills that somebody can get in school.
Oh, absolutely.
Clear writing.
Reading and writing skills, absolutely.
Yeah. So tell us, what did you have involvement directly in the Red for Ed movement?
I was not one of the founders or mm-hmm. anything like that, but yes, I was very involved at my site level, very supportive of it. We did the walk-ins. Mm-hmm. We meet on our own time, but we meet every week and chat mm-hmm. things out and lay out a game plan. I was very inspired by Red for Ed. Mm-hmm. I was really happy that there were more teachers who were finally coming out from behind their classroom walls or doors and actually advocating for themselves, which is really hard to do because teachers are so overwhelmed. So adding on an element of advocacy is very tough.
Did you happen to be on the closing days of the legislative session? Did you happen to be one of the Red for Ed teachers that stuck around to the end and actually watched the legislative session?
I have done that before. I was at the Capitol in 2015 at 3 a.m. when they were passing the budget. I didn't this time only because I had to leave for some kind of an appointment. I don't remember what. And my friends who were there said, don't come because you can't get in anyway. Mm-hmm. Like you can't get in to actually watch this, so don't even come.
We've interviewed folks who were there who were completely shocked and made statements like, I had no idea this was the way the process worked.
Correct. They had no idea.
I mean, you hear about, oh, everything goes through the committee and it gets aired and this and this and this, and that's all true, except at the end of the session when they invent stuff out of whole cloth and they have what they call, you know what a strike all amendment is?
Yes, I do.
You start with a legislation on one topic. You take all the words off the piece of paper. You put on another whole set of words on a different topic. It has the same bill number. It's a way of bypassing the whole process. And if you are in the party that has the votes to do it, you ram it through without the participation
yes.
of the other party.
Yeah.
And there were folks in there who were watching that who were saying, my God, they just did what?
That's what I mean by how inspiring this is. You know, I've been basically shouting into the wind, not just me, but few mm-hmm. teachers shouting into the wind for a pretty long time about, you know, we have some problems. We have some significant issues that we have to solve. And now seeing so many teachers who actually understand what's going on gives me a lot of hope.
Let me ask one specific question. The Red for Ed movement in your campaign and other, whether it's Red for Ed, which I'm using kind of as a coverall for teacher involvement in politics, mm-hmm. How much help have they been to you?
They've been a great deal of help. We've gotten, after the Invest for Ed signatures were collected, she was already pretty much on our campaign, but came in on even more full force. I mean, we've gotten some heavy lifters, I guess I would call them. Mm-hmm. One in particular who is...
You can name names if you want. No, you don't have to, but...
Her name is Jennifer, and she is doing the work of, you know, I don't even know, three or four people. She is on our campaign. Even though she's a full-time teacher, I guess she's got to be in the campaign office 30 hours a week, maybe. Mm-hmm. And she's got the skills and knowledge. So her alone... Just the addition of Jennifer alone has been an amazing boost to the campaign.
Okay. We will return for concluding segment with former Teacher of the Year and Arizona State Senate candidate Christine Porter Marsh.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We are back with Arizona State Senate candidate, former Teacher of the Year, Christine Porter Marsh. By the way, just a heads up, we have exit music to get us out of the show. I like the music we normally use because I wrote it and I arranged it, so I'm a little partial to it. But we're going to dispense with that. And we'll be replaced by the second verse of one of my favorite melody tunes. It relates to, I think it's a little dig at education for fun. I'm guessing you're too young to remember Melanie, but... No,
do you remember what?
Melanie?
Yeah, sorry.
Like I said, there was a concert up in upstate New York in 1969. She got famous there, so it was Woodstock. But anyway, back to topic. I just want to give people heads up to give people a little, you can listen to the words. But your opponent is Kate Brophy McGee. She was on earlier this year. She was, I think by most people's assessment, one of only two Republican swing votes. In other words, a Republican who was occasionally persuadable. The other one was Bob Worsley. Bob is retiring. If she is left, if she wins a race against you, she'll be the only one left. She's probably been more supportive of education than almost any other Republican in the legislature. Why take on her?
We need new leadership and fresh voices down at the Capitol. Our kids are being left behind over 10 years, longer. She's been there 8 years, and our kids are losing out. So we need to change the leadership down there so that we can have better conversations about all of the problems affecting Arizona, and certainly about the problems that affect our students in particular. We're just not having the level of conversations that we could and need to be having.
So you think you can be a stronger advocate than she has been?
100%. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So tell us, what's wrong with our schools? The question is it just money? You're a lifelong educator. The money part is obvious, and it's measurable, and some of that got dealt with, and maybe more to come. That's a whole argument about that. But other than financing, is that all of it, or what else would you fix about our schools?
Well, this is like triage. This is like if you've got a family in poverty, then they need enough money to just actually eat. Funding, certainly, we have got to take care of that. We also, I think, need to get in a position where we are actually making our students feel valued, which is partly money, reducing class size. Mm-hmm. We absolutely have to reduce class size. But, one of the pivotal moments for me, and maybe my entire life, but certainly in the last like 3 or 4 years, was a student who came to me after class one day and asked if kids in Arizona were worth less than kids in other states. And I didn't know what he was talking about. And I asked him, what do you mean? And he said, well, we are funded, last in the nation. We must not be worth as much as kids in other states. And I don't remember exactly what I said, but something to the effect of, well, I certainly don't feel that way. But the fact that we have, 16, 17-year-old kids who feel that is heartbreaking, and we absolutely have to change it. So we've got to get the funding in so that the kids feel valued and then look beyond that. Certainly there's a lot with some of the testing mechanisms that I would like to explore. But again, it's the family in poverty, and until you are just feeding them a proper meal, then the rest, you've got to triage your priorities.
You ever read a book called The Smartest Kids in the World?
I've read excerpts of it, but not in the last,
I was so enamored of that. I did a whole show on it, and then I got the author on it. We did a whole second show on it. I was, frankly, such an advocate of what I had read, got excited by it. I thought I told her, I thought I did a better summary of her book than she did. Because I was, and essentially, I mean, there are so many multiple. What this book was a comparative study of education in Finland, which is kind of the all-star, in Korea, which has one model that's kind of drill people to death and, get kids. And then they've got a high degree of success, but at an incredible personal cost. The kids are staying up all night in academies and it's against the law to keep them there after a certain number of hours. And so they blacken the curtains and all that, and the kids are staying up all night studying. And what was interesting about the analysis of Finland is they do just the opposite. It's not more homework. They don't have longer school days. But I think my biggest takeaway was that, but they absolutely value education.
Yes.
That becoming a teacher in Finland is more difficult than getting to be a doctor in the United States. Mm-hmm. It is the first thing they did was close down the School of Education in most of the places where they existed. They put them back in only in their most elite institutions. Very, very hard to get into. They cranked up the pay a lot. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be the most high paid job in the world, but it was commensurate with high value. And I mean, it was kind of a whole package. You needed an attitudinal basis in the country that really was supportive. And then getting a job as a teacher in Finland is extremely difficult.
They, But they also made sure and they got parents and specifically fathers on board before they did this big reform movement. And they are, not to knock what Finland's doing, because they are doing amazing things, but it's a relatively homogeneous population. And in the United States, where we're educating every single child, no matter what disabilities or no matter what might come to them. And I don't think people, when they're comparing...
I thought, by the way, dealt with that homogeneity, because one of the other places they talked about was Poland, which wasn't quite as successful as Finland, but it was had turned it around. They had one of the least well-performing schools, and they are not homogeneous. They've had massive immigration, you know, from the South. But the rest of it was very consistent, high value to it. And they allowed to, and essentially, I look at a lot of ours that we kind of, I think our schools are starved. You have to fund them up to some reasonable level before you can even talk about this stuff. But that in and of itself isn't going to do it.
I agree with that. But I also think that we can't even look at some of those deeper problems until we can at least get to the point where things are not getting worse. I had spent my old teacher of the year just making sure things didn't get worse.
I mean, you don't solve poverty if you're hungry and you're worried about your next meal. You're not worrying about long-term stuff, and I think that's where we are in
absolutely
this state. But once you do that, then there has to be a next step. What would that be? Let's assume you get funding up to a decent level. What's next?
And we get to reduce class size.
Well, that's presumably.
Then we start looking at some of the specific things. Like, we need to increase writing right now, which is a symptom of the fact that the class sizes are so big, so we can't get enough writing in. That would be my first emphasis, is to focus on writing skills across the grade levels and across the curriculum.
Well, thank you, Christine Marsh.
Thank you for having me.
Candidate for Senate, former Teacher of the Year. By the way, you can find our old podcast at ktar.com. They've redone that. We can go back almost a year. And the older ones, older than that, will be at mikeoneill.org. And among other things, if you want to search way back in there, you will find the reference I made to the book, The Smartest Kids in the World. A couple of good shows on education. See you next week.
Find a real good book I'd never have to come out and look at what they done to my song.